This is Tom Warren inviting you to listen to 5 Gospel Minutes. Today, as we continue our study of marriage, having already seen why marriage is such an important study and the many reasons why it fails in some cases, we now take up our study of the profound significance of the marriage ceremony itself. And by that I mean the profound significance of saying I do in answer to the various questions during the marriage ceremony. There are some mistaken views of the marriage vow, and there are some true views. And I wish, first of all, to take up some of the mistaken views because I think this will help us to better understand the true views. Recently, in a leading magazine, there was published a cartoon which depicted one worldly wise young lady speaking to another one, and she was saying, "If I divorce him, I know he will have to give me a great deal of money in settlement, but so far I just haven't been able to get him to propose. You see, even before he ever asked her to marry him, she was already planning the money that she was going to get in a divorce settlement." Such an attitude is somewhat typical of the attitude which many people have toward the marriage vow that is to be taken. To them, marriage isn't something that is to be permanent at all, but something to gain a selfish end. Another mistaken view is that of viewing the ceremony only as a legal trifle. There are people who regard it as a trifle which must be performed to legalize physical intimacy, and it's that and nothing more in their sight. Still another mistaken view is this. Some view the vow as a trifle which is the business only of the marriage partners. They say it's their business and theirs alone if they decide to break these vows. Others view the vow as joining together two angels, two beings who are absolutely perfect and who will never make a single mistake, who will never have any problem with one another at all. Being absolutely committed to the idea that no trouble will ever arise when conflict of any sort does arise, then they are disillusioned. They then use this conflict as grounds to break up their marriage. Some look upon the vow in the opposite way. They well know that trouble is coming, and they do not expect anything but trouble. So when they marry, they already have in mind that they're going to use that trouble when it arises as a ground or an excuse to break up the marriage and form another. Then there are those who feel that as long as one obeys civil law, God will accept and bless their union. This false theory has not only been taught by those out of the church, but it has been taught and defended by some within it. It has been taught by some who claim even to be preachers of the gospel. We need to recognize that the gospel of our Lord is addressed to every person on this earth and that all of us are accountable to the law of Jesus Christ. All of us are amenable to the gospel of Christ, Mark chapter 16 and verse 15. Certainly every one of us lives under God's instruction as pertains to marriage. All of these views that I have presented thus far are erroneous, out of harmony with plain Bible teaching. Let us now look at the true views of the marriage vow. Let's look at some of the things which a marriage vow involves. First of all, I suggest that this vow involves others beside the bride and groom. In the first place, it involves the Lord Himself. In the 19th chapter of Matthew, Jesus said, "What God has joined together, let not man put asunder." And God joins only partners who are eligible to be married according to His instructions. Matthew chapter 19, verses 1 to 12. If either one or both of the partners who's presenting himself for marriage is not eligible, then that marriage becomes an adulterous union. Every one of us should recognize that in the marriage vow, not only are we and our partner involved, but God Himself is involved. God's law governs marriage, for He, not man, instituted it. And the law of man, either in the church or out of it, must not contradict or set aside the law of God. We must recognize that God is a party to the covenant that is made in any and every marriage between eligible partners. This is not a mere human contract that can be broken or torn up as one might tear up a piece of paper, but this is a solemn covenant or agreement before God to which God Himself is a party. Now, of course, when either partner is guilty of fornication, then the innocent party has the right to put that party away and to be free to be remarried. But let us not deceive ourselves and to talk ourselves into thinking that otherwise we have that right. Be with us again next time as we continue our study, Marriages for Those Who Love God and One Another.